This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 32. For ages on Instagram, we've followed and admired today's guest. Her healthful recipes and photographic style focuses on the ingredients and the fabulous way that helps to emphasize how important it is to cook with in-season ingredients. We asked her to be a summer community leader for the Pure Green In-Season Cookbook Project, and we're thrilled when she agreed. In fact, you can read her recipe and interview on the Pure Green site at this very moment. In case you haven't guessed, today's guest is Sherry of the blog With Food and Love, which is a gorgeous place to spend time, allowing yourself to get steeped in seasonal inspiration, sure to spark a trip to the farmer's market and a lazy Sunday evening spent cooking. Sherry writes from a personal perspective. She's a health coach and aspiring plant-based chef whose journey in healthy eating began with her discovery that she was intolerant to gluten. The journey back to health was full of ups and downs, but once she got things right, she was sold on her new approach to eating healthfully and now has made it her life's work to help others make similar changes through her virtual coaching business. We talk of all this and much more, and the episode is one you're sure to thoroughly enjoy. Here's Sherry. I wanted to ask you, just as a way of getting started, what set you on your current path of helping others through nutrition and wellness?
Sure. So thanks for having me, Celine. And I guess the answer is kind of complicated. I was telling my husband this morning that that question comes up often, and I kind of wish I had this really clear-cut way of explaining it. But so it's kind of a long story if you want to get into it, but basically, I was in my undergrad program, I studied sociology and women's studies, and I always had in mind working with women in some, capacity, and I always was kind of interested in health and wellness, but I really didn't know how that would unfold. And so when I graduated college, I immediately moved out to Denver, Colorado. I actually bought my plane ticket on, the day I had my last final exam and just went right out there. And I pretty much right away just started, my first job there was working for a program, a nonprofit that helped women that were struggling from sexual abuse and domestic violence. And that was a canvassing job, which was really hard, both physically and just the content was very emotional. So that lasted only a few months. And then I very quickly just started working in restaurants, which I had done as a teenager and throughout college, and had always been drawn to working with food. So that felt very natural. And I did that pretty much for the whole 5 years that I lived there. And then the last 2 years, I worked at a center that was dedicated to improving the lives of children with autism and on the autism spectrum. And I worked, I guess my role was technically a teacher, but I didn't have a teaching degree. It was just a private school. And, they hired me because I had previous experience working with children with special needs. So I kind of was all over the place. And at the same time, I wasn't treating myself very well. I've always kind of struggled with anxiety. And I was just kind of being young and not really thinking about the big picture of everything going on. And eventually I had met my boyfriend, who is now my husband, and we decided to leave Colorado and kind of start clean and, just keep plugging away. He at the time had been laid off from his job. He worked in news. And so then when we moved to Philly, things kind of started clicking. And I had gone to school with someone during my undergrad who went to the Institute for Integrative Nutrition and had become a health coach. And I had a really great conversation with her, or a kind of a series of conversations about that. And at the same time, I was getting really into health and wellness. Additionally, I had gone gluten-free, and I was really taking notice that, what you put in your body really affects you on every level. So it kind of all just came together, and then I enrolled in nutrition school in 2012, graduated in 2013, and became a health coach pretty much, in when I graduated and started taking clients pretty much right away. So that's kind of how it unfolded.
I mean, that's the way life is. It's, you know, it's impossible to package things up in a nutshell because it's so nuanced and that's normal. So, I mean, it's interesting that you also struggled with anxiety. I mean, my conversation with Renee last week on the podcast, I mean, she struggled with the same things. And, you know, in this day and age, it's just so, it's hard to escape that. It's no wonder this playing more and more of a role. But you said, I know you've talked about this on your blog, and you briefly mentioned that you went gluten-free, and that was all compounded by health problems that you were having. So what was the how did you discover that you were actually gluten intolerant or whatever, you know, the meaning of that is? And then what was that process like of picking yourself back up again and healing yourself?
Sure. So I guess for as long as I can ever remember, I've always struggled with some sort of digestive discomfort. But most importantly, I have always had these horrific chronic canker sores. So after I went gluten-free, those kind of subsided altogether. And one of the markers of knowing now, you know, if I've been gluten, unintentionally, I'll get a canker sore within 48 hours, and I'll always kind of be able to trace it back. But so those were the two physical, you know, things that were happening to me a lot. And it also was a huge emotional piece. Since I've been gluten-free, I feel happier, I feel more content, I feel clearer. And so there was definitely just as much physical as emotional pieces, you know, to the puzzle. But I think it was when I was teaching at the center for autism, that those children were on very specific diets, you know, like corn-free, dye-free, sugar-free, plant-based, really, you name it, gluten-free, of course. And it was at that moment where I was like, oh, okay, what is this all about? Why are they doing this? And is it really helping? And I kind of just decided to give it a try. And I did. And I felt infinitely better. Not necessarily right away. I think at first I was still kind of eating really horrible, but gluten-free bread and gluten-free pastas and cookies and stuff. And I wasn't really focused on nutrients. I was just kind of focused on cutting out the gluten. And because it's really overwhelming at first, I think, for anyone. And so I did that. And then we very shortly moved right after that process. I did it for maybe 6 months. And then we moved to Philadelphia. And when we moved to Philadelphia, I wasn't married yet. And I was working, you know, freelance jobs and in the restaurant industry. And I didn't have any health insurance. So I had wished that I had gotten properly tested for celiac disease before I went gluten-free, because there's two main ways to test for celiac. And one is for, you know, the celiac antibodies. And you have to be eating gluten in order to test positive for that. And if you carry the celiac gene. So I guess long story short is that I went gluten-free very strictly. At first it was kind of up and down. And then I went gluten-free very strictly for about 2 years. And then I got health insurance and I was tested at that point for the celiac gene, which I carry. And you cannot develop celiac in your lifetime without that gene, which is also hereditary. And I was never really tested for the antibodies because, of course, they wouldn't show up. And I never really thought that going to the trouble of eating gluten for, you know, a minimum of 30 days, they ideally want you to eat it for 60 or 90 or something crazy, to go through that, you know, pain and process wasn't really worth it. So I treat my condition as though I do have celiac. It's a lifetime decision, and there's no reason for me to start eating gluten because sometimes my reaction isn't always super severe. I think it's kind of something that affects me over a few days. Like I said, I'll get a canker sore within 48 hours or so. And, mentally and emotionally, I feel less clear and often more down. But I'm not necessarily one of those people where if I eat something with gluten and, you know, 6 hours or so, like I'm in debilitating pain. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes it does, and sometimes I'm really uncomfortable, but it's usually something that's over a long period of time, or a couple of days rather. So yeah, I don't even know if that answers your question, but.
Well, there's a couple of things that I wanted to ask you in there, but I mean, it's curious that, well, first of all, I guess, why were the kids in the autism program on special diet? Like, do they know that eating, you know, certain foods like sugar, well, I mean, sugary to me, that sort of makes sense, but some of the other foods affects their behavior, or why was it that they were on that strict diet?
Yeah, well, that's really a question. So, and I'm not an expert in that, you know, but I kind of, in my experience working there, that these, they're linked to, you know, improving their behaviors in a positive way. So, so casein-free was one, and corn-free and gluten-free, dye-free, sugar-free. I think it was mostly just a behavioral and emotional piece, you know, to the bigger picture. And I also think that a lot of times families are just really willing to try anything to help. And if it helps in the slightest way, then they're willing to do it.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's curious to me that you said that eating gluten affects you emotionally. And it's funny because we just mentioned that anxiety is becoming such a big theme right now that, well, not right now, but just we are faced with so much. There's so many are struggling with that. And so I wonder if that's a more common symptom that people don't even know that they're having. It's not even, you know.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't want to go on like the gluten-free crusade, and I don't think it's for everyone. And, you know, I certainly don't even recommend it to my clients unless it's something that they're interested in or that they would benefit from, you know, very clearly. But yeah, I think that there's some truth to that, especially, I mean, I've experienced firsthand, and some of my clients who decide to go gluten-free just because they want to, you know, see how they feel, do also experience outcomes similar to that, feeling just lighter and more energized and clearer, kind of like just more clarity overall.
Wow. Yeah. I'm thinking about myself.
Yeah.
Man, I wake up in the morning, I don't feel rested. And I've been struggling with some of those things like clarity and energy forever.
Yeah.
And I've had other conversations, especially here on the podcast with other guests where I've, you know, we've talked about the benefits of doing certain things. And gluten-free is definitely one that I wanted to experiment with, but I have utterly failed.
Yeah, it's hard. It's, I mean, and the thing about going gluten-free, I often hear like, oh, well, I'll just avoid it and it makes me feel better. It's really kind of an all or nothing experiment. So if somebody does want to go gluten-free, I would just really, I can't stress it enough that it needs to be a very strict elimination for at least, you know, 2 weeks, I'd say. A month is probably ideal. I don't know. I think everyone's a little bit different. But yeah, an all or nothing. And that's really hard because it's in so many foods. Like sneakily, you know, and it's kind of like this hidden ingredient, and you know, it's in soy sauce and salad dressings and obviously like beer and carb, you know, pizza and pasta, and you know, so yeah, it's an overwhelming process for sure. One that I'm still, after almost 6 years, adjusting, you know, trying to adjust to.
Really? In what way?
Well, I mean, so I grew up in an Italian family, and pizza and bread and pasta and all of those foods were pretty prevalent, and I can have them now. They make really great, you know, not, you know, gluten-free alternatives. But I think for me, it's much more of an emotional piece. So when I see someone eating like a piece of New York style, like thin, you know, like a nice, super awesome slice of pizza, like that's just like a dagger in my heart. Like I just want it so bad. And of course I can have gluten-free pizza, but you know, it's not always the greatest. And it's kind of like a,
it's like a pizza cracker.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that, I feel like I can even live with gluten-free pizza crust. It's mostly bread. I have a hard time. I don't know. I've come to the conclusion. I just have to forget about it.
Yeah. Right. It's easier to do that sometimes, but there's a lot of really great gluten-free bread, but most of them aren't super great, and you definitely can't, you know, get like a crusty Italian like loaf or, you know, or baguette or something. That's pretty hard to come by. Although, interestingly enough, when so my husband's mother, my mother-in-law lives in Italy, and the two times that I've traveled there, it's been super easy to eat gluten-free, and I've had some of the best gluten-free pasta and pizza of my life. And every time I tell someone that, they get, you know, they're really shocked. And they actually test every child. I'm pretty sure of this being certain, that they test every child, you know, before the age of 6 for celiac disease. And then they take it pretty seriously. And if you do have celiac disease, they give you like a government stipend for food, and kind of impressive the way that, you know, they treat it. It's not here. It's kind of like, oh, you're just picky. But yeah, it is a real thing.
Gosh, I find that so interesting. Is that just because it's so prevalent there specifically, or just it's become prevalent everywhere, but they're just dealing with it much better?
I don't know if it's more prevalent there, but I think that they just, because their culture is so heavily influenced by wheat, and because it's real serious, you know, autoimmune disease, that if you do eat it and you don't know that you have celiac disease, it can cause a lot of really serious problems. So I think that they're just, it's more of like a prevention, if anything. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool.
It is really cool. Yeah.
So I wonder, do you think that our problems with gluten have, like, because I don't remember hearing about this even 5 years ago. Like, it's, I mean, maybe it was just starting to come to the surface, but it feels like it's gotten so much worse lately. And so why do you think that is? I mean, first of all, is that the case? And why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's gotten worse lately. What I think is happening, and I'm definitely not an expert in this, you know, subject, but it's just really more personal experience, that so after, I kind of call it like the gluten-free boom, and it happened around, you know, like maybe 2013 or so. And I think what was happening was that these, you know, processed food companies were picking up on the fact that there was a market for this. And so pretty much every, you know, brand has some sort of gluten-free alternative. And even if their food is already naturally gluten-free, that they will put on their product that it's gluten-free. So a lot of times, like, people are already eating naturally gluten-free foods, and they don't even, you know, they don't really understand what gluten-free really means. But so I guess my theory is that all of these brands were just doing it for the money, and that kind of got other people interested into, like, hey, what is this? And people who may not necessarily be, you know, in tune with health and wellness or their bodies. And so I think everyone, you know, slowly kind of jumped on this bandwagon. And I think it will fade out. You know, I think it will come and go. But certainly there's still a need, because celiac disease is real and people have it. So and also through that exposure of gluten, like this gluten-free boom and like this trend, I think it has brought attention to people who have celiac disease that never, you know, even really thought about it or knew the word or heard of it, or, you know, like kind of myself, I had really no idea what this was in 2010. I had no idea. So I think it's kind of like this organic process that's happened over time, and it will fade back out. But yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that it's maybe it just brought visibility to an already underlying problem.
Exactly.
But one of the awesome side effects, I think, anyway, even if you have no problem with gluten at all, it's the fact that our, you know, our diets used to be very diverse in terms of grain or whatever, and now it's become so myopic in terms of just wheat all the time, and it's in everything. And so, you know, it's just really helped educate people about how much wheat is actually invading our diets and how careful we have to be, and maybe just give it some more thought in terms of expanding and making an effort to cut it out at least a little.
Yeah, totally. Or find, you know, new alternative grains that maybe you wouldn't have used before that are, you know, naturally gluten-free, like quinoa, of course, and millet and amaranth and you know, other things. So, yeah, totally agree.
What is your favorite gluten-free grain?
Well, I really do love quinoa because it's also a great source of plant-based protein. So that's kind of my go-to. But I'm also really just love like brown rice. Like I'll make a batch of brown rice at the beginning of the week, and I'll be able to have that for, you know, breakfast porridge and stir fry, like veggie stir fry. I'll kind of just like use it throughout the week. So that's, you know, kind of boring, but I do love it.
I've always loved millet too. I grew up eating millet.
You did?
And yeah, my mom is really into health food when I was little. And yeah, millet was a staple for us.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. Quinoa was newer for me. Like it was only in the last like 5 years or so that I started eating it. And I still meet people who've never tried it, yeah. Which is shocking.
It's a little shocking, but it also kind of makes sense. And I meet a lot of people who really don't like it at all.
It does have like a, that's the one thing I do find about quinoa. I like the taste, except I find it's a stronger taste.
Mm-hmm.
Like throughout whatever I cook with it, it sort of, it plays a part in the flavor profile where some other grains just kind of disappear. It's more about texture.
Sure. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. So it was, I could talk about this forever because I'm really interested in it, but I wanted to ask you more about being a health coach as well. So I'm assuming that it was your own healing process that inspired you to work with others in order to heal them through nutrition.
Yeah, it was. Well, I think it all happened kind of at the same time that I had gone gluten-free for maybe about a year, and then I was introduced to the Institute for Integrative Nutrition through a friend, and also at the same time, my husband and I were watching a lot of food documentaries and kind of just like binging on information and health and wellness. And we watched Forks Over Knives, which kind of radically changed our life. And over about a year or so, my husband was able to lose about 50 pounds adopting a plant-based diet.
Wow.
So the same time that I was, you know, shifting into this gluten-free lifestyle, I was also shifting more into eating a heavier plant-based diet. Which wasn't super new to me. I was a vegetarian as a child, by choice in my home, and everyone thought I was, you know, a weirdo, but I just never was really drawn to eating meat, and I don't really crave it very often. But we enrolled in a CSA that summer and just started cooking plants all the time. And that was also when I started my blog. So it was kind of like this pinnacle moment where everything was happening at the same time. I enrolled in health school or nutrition school, and Chris was losing weight. We were eating, you know, a more vegan diet. And so through that process, I think it kind of, I was able to take shape of what I wanted to do within my health coaching business. Because when I went to nutrition school and I first started, I really had no idea what I wanted to do or how I wanted to use it. And it just kind of organically unfolded, mostly through my blog.
Yeah, which I definitely want to get into in a little bit. But I wanted to ask you, so are you plant-based? Are you, like, do you still eat, like, dairy or cheese, eggs, that kind of stuff? Or have you cut it all out completely?
So I do. I eat since I've moved to the Midwest, which is kind of another story, but since I moved to the Midwest, I my life has just kind of been a little bit more chaotic, moving across country and such, but I shoot for about 90%, you know, strictly vegan, plant-based, and then 10% for dairy and eggs. I actually feel really nourished when I eat eggs. I probably eat those a little bit more often, and meat, so, and fish. So it's definitely not strictly vegan. I just try to put a focus on vegetables and whole grains first. Yeah. And we keep a pretty much a plant-based home. Like every once in a while we'll have some cheese and we have eggs, but we don't like buy meat for our house or animal products really in general. So we save those opportunities for, you know, eating out at restaurants we really want to try and farm to table concepts and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very similar to you. I'm so lucky. I have a farmer who supplies me with way more eggs than I can eat. That's my middle ground. That's sort of how I feel okay with eating things like that, you know, because for me, it's as much about the, you know, the process, like the commercial process of eggs and dairy as it is about the, you know, the nutritional side of it. So I've been, if I can find it locally with someone who I trust implicitly, then I'll eat it and I feel fine with it. But, well, I mean, eggs in particular. Dairy, I don't know why. It's a thing for me I feel like I need to pare down on. And I've actually just started experimenting with making coconut yogurt. And it's been hugely successful. I'm so happy.
Did you use Renee's recipe?
I did, except that I added more probiotics because I found that one just wasn't enough, which is probably just the brand that I was using. It's a shelf-stable version, so probably less active culture. And then I found that the coconut milk I was using, because that's the other thing, with everything, but I've noticed that with coconut milk, it's rarely just coconut milk. Like, you really have to read the ingredients.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and so the type that I found that was literally pure, I mean, the ingredients are coconut flesh and water. That one was more liquidy, and so I wasn't able to get it to set, so I started putting it in my slow cooker. Actually has like a yogurt, just like a keep warm.
Cool.
So I started doing that, and since I started doing that, actually it sets completely. And if I want like a really thick yogurt, I strain off the water, because sometimes there is a little bit of water in it after the fermentation.
Right.
And or the culturing, and once I do that, it's like Greek yogurt. It's amazing. It's so easy, and the taste is different, but so similar. It's not even, especially if you mix it up with things. It's really good.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I've never tried making my own, and I'm planning on making Renee's version. And I've tried a few store bought brands, and I haven't really been super impressed. Well, I think that there's one coconut. And one almond yogurt that I've tried that I really didn't like at all. But yeah, yogurt is a tricky one.
I know. It's so good and it's such a staple. It's so easy to just pull that out for breakfast.
Yeah.
I never felt good about the fact that it was dairy. So it's honestly, you should try it because it's been really good. Another way, I haven't tried it because I do have this slow cooker that can function this way, but if you put it in the oven overnight with just the light on and wrapped in a towel, that does the same thing for about 7 to 8 hours. And I mean, as an experiment, I had my family over for dinner last night, and I gave my sister and my mom a spoonful without telling them what it is, and asked them, you know, what do you think this is? And my mom was able to pick it out, although she'd never had it. My sister was like, it's like a cross between sour cream and coconut milk. But they both liked it, so.
I love it.
Yeah, it's really good. So what does your work as a health coach entail?
So I, it's kind of this, like, I developed this program called 21 Days to Lean and Green. It's that kind of just, over the years, has slowly, you know, evolved, but the gist is it's 3 weeks with me. I'm kind of like your cheerleader, your go-to, any questions, I'm there for you. And I provide basically like every week I provide new resources, new handouts with information and, new recipes. And the program builds on itself. So week one is kind of the intro, and week two we get into like the middle, you know, the meat of the program. And then week three is kind of, okay, this is all really great, but how do we apply this to our life, like outside of this really, structured environment? And the other piece is I provide them this super confidential Facebook group. So I usually have about 10 to 15 clients each month, and I run them all, they all do it at the same time. And the group on Facebook allows them to kind of be in this community and ask each other questions and build each other up and be held accountable for their actions. And of course, I'm posting on there daily and kind of just, it's just kind of like the heartbeat of the program. So yeah, those are kind of all the pieces.
So then you strictly work with the groups through your, I'm assuming that you offer this through your blog. And so you don't do like, that's kind of nice because you're not sort of tied down to appointments every day of the week at all hours.
Yeah. So I do offer them one health coaching session. So they with their, you know, with the whole program, they do have one of those. It's 45 minutes and we do them either Skype or FaceTime or just telephone. And if they're local, I would meet with them in person, although that happens very rarely. And it's just because my blog has an international readership. And so, I mean, I have clients that I Skype with from Germany and Australia. And so it's really cool in that way. But so that only occupies like the first week of the program. I'm pretty busy with client calls, but then the second 2 weeks, it is mostly just support.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what is it that, why do people take this course typically? Like, is it, are they looking to detox? Are they looking to phase into this kind of diet? What's the main motivator?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's quite diverse. So some of my clients, understand, and they've been following my blog, and they may have celiac disease or another autoimmune illness, and they want to go gluten-free, and because the program is not strictly gluten-free, it's probably about 95% just naturally gluten-free, because we cut out most processed food anyway. So it's a really great program for someone that is new to going gluten-free or wants more guidance and how to live a healthier life doing so. A lot of my clients come to me because they just want to like get their life together. So the program is very much like this mind-body reboot. And there's a lot of like lifestyle and de-stressing activities that we do. And so that's a big piece of it. And then some come because they want to be, they want to go vegan or go mostly plant-based, and they just really don't know how in a healthy way. So, it's varied.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. And I'm thinking that I need to do this too.
You should. You totally should. Also, a lot of them are moms that are super busy and their kids are all really picky eaters, or they have a lot of different allergies or restrictions, and they just kind of want to be able to like hone it in and figure out really healthy, nutrient-dense foods and meals that they can make for their family that everyone's going to really enjoy. That's a very common thread that, you know, I get these emails from, mostly moms or single women who are just, you know, workaholics, or, you know, they just don't have time to make healthy food. But I always kind of reply with, it's always kind of about the priority of what you want to put it in your life. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't it so, it's so terrible that our health just, it's the priority of it just feels so, it falls so low.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So busy and you feel accountable to so many other people, you forget all about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I can totally see how moms, how they fit into the picture. I mean, I'm lucky that I'm fairly experienced and I've been eating this way my whole life, but I still feel like I struggle sometimes because I struggle with either the mental energy to be creative and come up with new things to eat or ideas. And now that I have a 2-year-old, who, I mean, when she first started eating food, my husband and I were on a mission to get this kid to eat everything. And it worked. She ate everything. And we were like, yes, we've done it.
We succeeded.
And then, I don't know, something happened. Like, she turned 2, I guess. I don't
know.
Yeah,
she's just 2. She's just a normal kid. She'll come back around.
Well, I hope so, because, now I have a hard time getting her to eat anything. and her preference is carbs, of course, and I agonize over it, and at the end of the day, I reflect on what she's eaten, and it's just, it's just so, it's tough.
Yeah,
so,
I can imagine. Don't stress. It will, she's getting what she needs.
Yeah. Other people, I have friends that their kids are a little older than mine, and their kids eat everything, like even sushi and like things that I wouldn't think kids would like. And so I asked them about that, and they were like, oh, yes, the white years.
Right.
To everyone, I guess. I don't know. So you, I want to jump over to your blog now a little bit. I just wanted to mention quickly, just so that readers know, since we've been talking about your course, you're offering one coming up shortly.
Yes, it starts, I don't know when this will air, but it starts September 14th, so it's the second Monday of the month, of next month. So it's sponsor limited, but I'm really trying to get this group full, so if anyone's interested, definitely shoot me an email.
Okay, well, I'll make sure to include links to all of that in the show notes, too, so that people can easily find it. So you had mentioned briefly that your blog and everything else kind of came to fruition all at the same time. But what function was your blog serving for you? Like, why did you want to start it specifically?
Yeah, so when I first started blogging, I actually blogged under a different name, which was strictly gluten-free kind of, my blog is strictly gluten-free now, but it was kind of this like journal that I was keeping that I had moved to this new city and I didn't know anyone. It was a city that, I mean, Philly's a really amazing food city, but it isn't necessarily known for like, eating like healthy. So I just wanted to find a space that I could, you know, write down how I was feeling. And then through that, I was cooking more, creating these recipes. And then I was starting to meet people within this blogging community and who are, you know, still some of my closest friends. And so kind of it started in that way. But then after about a year and a half of writing this blog, I was honing in on really like how I wanted to present my health coaching business, and like my food was starting to take shape and my recipe style and everything. And then I launched With Food and Love. So With Food and Love is, I think it went live like in the spring of 2013. So it's about 2 years old, two and a half. Yeah.
So, obviously, you chose the name with care. What does it mean to you?
So within my health coaching practice, we talk a lot about primary foods, which are the things that we consume all day long that actually aren't our like food. So our career and our relationships with others and our spirituality and finding movement and physicality. So that's kind of the love portion, which is, you know, like the lifestyle, and food is obviously the food.
Yeah. And to mention that before, that when you're talking about your program and how it includes the lifestyle and the mental and emotional components too, I really love that. I think that's a necessary aspect, something that many other diet programs or, you know, detox programs lack, because whenever you change your diet, I do think there's a huge emotional component to it, because if you're letting go of something and it's hard.
Absolutely. And part of the reason why we're all eating the way that we do, and I struggle with it my whole life and still do every day, is to kind of feel like this emotional piece that we're not getting somewhere else, whether we're overworked or struggling with anxiety or other health issues, or, you know, not finding enough me time. So it's kind of like all of these pieces that fit together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I definitely fall victim to that regularly.
Yeah, I think everyone does, yeah.
So is it just, you know, you want to share your lifestyle with others? Like, so is that, that's why you felt so compelled to share your story? Or is there like and some more deep reason as well?
I think that when I first started blogging, it was just a really good space. And I actually didn't, you know, I never I didn't like get into blogging because I like wanted to have a blog and have it be popular. I just kind of did it for myself, and then it just kind of took shape. But now it's a really great component to being a health coach. But really, most importantly, like I really love to cook. So, and I've always loved to cook. So I think sharing my recipes that are, in my opinion, like healthier and really still tasty, that's a big piece of it, to show others that eating well doesn't have to be gross, essentially, you know?
Plain, completely uninspired.
Yeah.
So where did you learn to cook then, if that's such a big, you know, clearly that's something you love to do. So where did that, was that something you learned on your own or?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, through my family and on my own. So I grew up in a very large and chaotic Italian family, and my parents had four children, and they had children very young. They started at a very young age. And so I was the second oldest child and the firstborn daughter. And my mom worked full time and my dad worked full time. And I was just put in this natural role of starting dinner for my mom or finishing dinner for my mom at a very young age, like 10. And I was always just like in the kitchen helping. So that's kind of where it started. And then as I got older, I always wanted to like just learn more from my aunts or my grandmother or my mom. And also my parents, you know, like we had everything that we needed, but we lived in a really like modest home and very middle class. And they were very resourceful with food. And, you know, my mom would like just come up with these great meals. I think Renee was saying the same thing about her mother, kind of just like having this really great ability to take random ingredients and make it really delicious. And so I kind of just adapted that style. And that's kind of where it was born. And then I took a backseat to cooking when I was in college. I didn't do much of that, or even when I lived in Denver. And then through my health and wellness journey, I was realizing that food is so valuable and what we eat is so important. It was kind of reborn.
I think it's so lucky that you have that skill. I meet so many people who just, and myself included, I really struggle to create things from scratch. I need a recipe. Yeah. So that's why blogs like yours are such a godsend, but also that's a big reason that Jonathan does so much of the cooking.
Well, yeah, thank you. I mean, I think I just was lucky in the role that I was given as a child, but.
There's an instinct there too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And then what about the photography aspect? Because your blog definitely stands out in that aspect too. So was that also something you just picked up on your own?
Kind of, yeah. So I kind of still always just feel like such a photographer, like amateur. Like I didn't pick up a camera until not even 2 years ago. So like when I first started blogging, I was using my iPhone for everything. So I guess I've only really had a DSLR camera for about a year and a half, but, and that was definitely self-taught just by, you know, watching other people, reading books, like Plate to Pixel, and, I took one course in Philly, basically like how to use my camera, but other than that, it's pretty self-taught. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I, like you, I've learned a lot through osmosis, just through the contributors and photo shoots that I've been on for the magazine, but it's tricky.
Yeah, it's also just kind of been this journey of like finding my own style and making that, because there's a lot of like photography styles out there that I really admire, but I'm not necessarily, you know, my eye is not, I just like can't produce that kind of look. And so at first I was kind of going through like a lot of different, like what do I want this to be like, and I feel like I finally kind of put it together, but it's definitely always still changing and growing and evolving.
Well, I mean, that's natural, of course. But I find that with the wealth of visual inspiration that we have available to us, it's almost really hard to develop your own style these days. You have to really stay true to it and just kind of keep that all in the peripheral and focus on what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. It's so overwhelming. Like, the amount of information and, like, visual stimulation that we receive all day long is just, it will, like, make your head spin.
But I love how your photos just, they really focus on the ingredients. That's clearly what's most important, and that really comes through and it's noticeable.
So. Yeah, thank you.
So what would you say are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned through blogging?
I don't know. I think that it's important to, you know, okay, I do know. So, you know, blogging is like kind of this really great little community, and you make really awesome connections with a lot of people. And overall, my, you know, most of my experience has been pretty positive, that everyone kind of lifts each other up and looks out for one another. But it's also really isolating in this way that we're like behind our computers all day long. And if I'm not behind my computer, I'm editing, you know, photos, or I'm taking photos, or, you know, I'm in my kitchen, but not as much as I'd like to be. Most of my job, I feel like I'm either writing, editing, or promoting myself in some way on social media. So I think that I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. And it can be kind of isolating and just, you know, working alone a lot. So I think it's really important to reach out to the people in your community that you really, you know, admire, or think that, you know, you should be real life friends, you know, and just kind of like getting out of your shell of being behind your computer and just like sending an email to somebody and being like, hey, I really love what you're doing, and let's be friends. Let's connect here. Let's support one another.
No, I relate to that 1,000%. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because often everything that we write is very, very heartfelt, and it's true. It's the lifestyle that we're looking to fulfill for ourselves. That's why we're writing about it. Except it's a function of the type of work that you do that often I feel like my life isn't congruent with the lifestyle that I'm promoting.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, it's so hard like that to learn those lessons and to figure out how to balance the two, because it is so easy to just stay cocooned behind your computer and realize like, oh man, I need to remind myself to get up. Or like, you know, it takes a long time to learn that. And I think as well, the community, I've noticed that actually quite a bit, that the community is starting online, is starting to make real life connections. I mean, like, that's why events are so popular and dinners and things like that. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Fortunately and unfortunately live far away from.
Oh, you're like, in Ontario?
Yes, I'm from Ontario, and I live in a region called Muskoka, which is. It's a largely seasonal community, but I live here full time.
Okay.
So it's about 2 hours north of Toronto, but a big part of my readership is online. I mean, it's in the U.S. So outside of traveling a lot, it's tough to sort of make some of those connections real.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, the flip side is that I live just totally immersed in nature. I mean, I live on the lake. The forest is steps away from my front door. So, I mean, those things are pretty valuable too.
Sure, yeah, it sounds gorgeous.
Yeah, it is. I'm a little sad that the weather is turning a little cooler. Just to remind myself that, I mean, I love fall. It's just bittersweet.
Yeah, no, it is. It is still like blazing hot and humid here in the Midwest, so.
Yeah, that's nice.
I'm kind of looking forward to the change.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little worried because my garden has a lot of, I was a little late planting things this year. It's funny, with some things I was super early, mm-hmm. and too early, and then with others I was late, and so I'm not sure some of them will ripen because the days are the nights are
so too sad.
I know, but oh well. So what is your creative process like when you're creating recipes or anything that you're doing?
So I kind of felt like in a real creative rut in the last, probably over just like the last 6 months, but more specifically this summer. I kind of briefly mentioned it, but so my husband and I moved from Philly to St. Louis in January. And it was a very abrupt move and one that I didn't want to make at all. And still sometimes like I'm fighting tooth and nail, you know, but realize that I'm here and I don't have a choice. So to make the most of it. But I think that I am greatly inspired by, you know, seasonal produce. So if I can't get my hands on that, then I feel very much in a rut. Through the summer, ironically enough, I've had like this garden that I've been, you know, taking care of and growing, and it's been such a great therapeutic process for me. I thought that I was going to get a lot of creative, you know, inspiration from, and I kind of, for me, it just kind of like fell flat. And I don't know if that's because I prefer to live on the coast and I'm in the Midwest, and something happens to me when I'm here, like just landlocked, it just feels like really unnatural. But in general, I guess to answer like the specific question, that I really feed off of the, you know, each bounty that the season brings, and shapes and colors and textures. And I kind of often start with one vegetable and just, you know, move from there, whatever is available, either from the garden or the market.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm very similar. So like, did you have to move for your husband's work?
I did. So he changed careers. And he changed careers from videography into aviation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so we'll be here in the Midwest for probably a temporary amount of time, and then off to a new home, you know, a new city that will most likely be more long-term. But, yeah, we came here in January.
Yeah, so so then you – I guess there must be are there cold, like, long winters there?
It's not so bad. It's pretty mild. So I grew up in the northern New York on the St. Lawrence River Valley, like very close to the Canadian border. And I went to college, you know, near Buffalo, and all my family is in Buffalo. And so I'm very like used to harsh winters. So this past winter didn't really feel like much to me. And I think overall they're pretty mild, but the summer is really hot. And the humidity is like heavy air, and it's like relentless. So that is different, but
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So then in the wintertime, will you have access to fresh produce? Like, what do you, I'm curious how you handle winter in terms of seasonal ingredients and how your cooking changes in that season, because that's something I super struggle with.
That's a really good question. When I lived in Philly, I had access year-round to a lot of local produce that was, you know, grown in greenhouses and houses and things in the area. And here in St. Louis, I struggled big time. Like when I first got here in January through April, I really had a hard time finding inspiration. So it will be interesting to see what happens this winter. I wish I could say that through living here, I've been able to find more local, you know, resources that I could source my food from throughout the cold winter, you know, the cold months. But I'm just not sure it's even available. I don't know. It's a really good question, one that I definitely struggle with a lot. And I think that right before the spring hits and like the whole spring bounty starts to unfold, I kind of go into like this depression of just like, will this ever end? And because creating is so much a part of like my soul and like how, you know, my person. So when that feels stagnant, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. Very hard. I mean, I have no choice but to shop at the grocery store.
Right, exactly. It's Whole Foods, really. I mean, yeah.
So it's like, oh, well.
Yeah, like
do what you have to and you survive.
Right. It. Yeah. I try not to like worry about it. Just, I try to stay sane.
Yeah, me too. So I have just one last question for you, Sherry. What's your biggest goal right now?
Okay. That's like something I've really been, going up and down and in and out with. I don't really know. I've been working on a book proposal, of sorts, and, felt really strongly about that for a while. Not that I'm reconsidering, but, books require a lot of time and energy to write. And I don't know if at this point in my life, like, that's something I want to get into. But for now, I think I really want to, you know, keep putting out really quality content and build my readership and, inspire people to eat good food. So I'm thinking short term.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have so much else going on that, and I do too. There's, that it just feels nice sometimes to just focus on the short, the short take day by day.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. So this is sort of a selfish question, but what are your main strategies for growing your, I know I have to say one last question, but for growing your audience, do you find social media as your main vehicle for that? Or how do you tackle that?
Yeah, I think that's like something all bloggers, I don't know if all bloggers do, but definitely I think majority are, that's just something we always, you know, how do we get more, you know, our traffic up? And over the summer, this weird thing happens where like just readership is down. And I think it's pretty common that it just dips a little bit and people are not on their computer so much and they're outside, which is a great thing. But for us, you know, it dives down a little. But so through that process, you can kind of go crazy that you're like putting out all this really great content and it's still like every day it's getting like slightly lower than the next. But so I think what helps me is just focus on quality readership instead of, quantity. Exactly. So
have the same philosophy. At the end of the day, that will serve you better. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
But it is, I mean, it's just, it feels like something you're always chasing.
It's a grind. It feels like a grind.
And every time you think you've got it mastered, something changes and you're like, oh no.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Sherry, thank you so much. I really have enjoyed talking with you and I really appreciate the time that you took to join me and share what you're doing. It's awesome and really special. And I look forward to joining you sometime on your Lena Green course.
Yeah,
too.
Thank you. Thank you for the candor. This was really fun and you definitely should.
So that concludes my talk with Sherry. So much good information in there, especially if you've ever wondered about gluten as part of your diet. As always, we've prepared show notes for you over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Sherry. And be sure to check out the links to Sherry's in-season feature on Pure Green, as well as her wellness course, Lean and Green. It's super reasonably priced, value-packed, and her next course starts September 14th. Also, if you're interested in submitting your work to the Pure Green Community Cookbook, now is the time as the summer submission cycle is coming to a close very soon. Check out the show notes for links. I'm Celine McKay, and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast.